Oh, hello. How are you doing? So here's the situation with the birthday party. As you know, I've been trying to organise my daughter Tiger Sky's birthday party, and it's getting a little bit complicated. First of all, her good friend Ivy's mother informed me that both Ivy and herself are vegetarians, and she's not allowed to go anywhere near meat at all, in case it tempts her or something. And so this means that I've had to buy in completely separate food for her, which I have to put in a sort of a separate room. But I don't mind that. As long as she's happy, as long as she and her mother are happy, then that's okay with me. But then, to make matters worse, it turns out that Tiger Sky's friend, Chlamydia, is violently allergic to nuts. Now, that's a bit of a problem, because I've already made the chocolate birthday cake, and I'm not 100% sure whether the chocolate that I used in the birthday cake has traces of nuts in it or not. So I'm going to have to remake the birthday cake from scratch. But I mean, I don't mind. That's okay. I mean, that's all right. And then it turns out that Tiger Sky is inviting her friend Sadia, and Sadia is a Muslim. And of course, I respect their faith. I really do. I don't want to offend them, but that means that we can't have any sausages. And I was hoping to have some sausages, but I'm going to have to buy lamb sausages instead. Now, they're much more expensive, but I don't mind. As long as everyone's content, that's absolutely fine. But then it turns out that Tiger Sky's friend Ethel is allergic to milk, and so this makes my life further complicated. I'm going to have to make a sort of a vegan cake, and as long as the party, everyone is happy, then I'm happy as well. Hello, and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now today I would like to talk about the way in which very small minorities who are intransigent and who manage to appeal to our moral feelings, and particularly our sense of the importance of equality and the importance of harm avoidance, can take over entire societies and push them in their direction, despite their only being very small in number. Now, I was inspired to do this by a fascinating book called Skin in the Game by Nassim Taleb, who I will tell you a bit more about later. Now, he has some wacky views on things like intelligence, but he does have some very good points to make about how very small minorities can basically take over the world. And that is what I want to look at today. And I want to particularly look at the way in which these people can really act as, and woke people in general, can really act as sort of parasites of society, can take hold of a society like fleas or ticks, and just suck its blood dry until there is nothing left of it, until it no longer has any power, and how it is that the body politic of that society is prepared to accept that. So how is it then that a tiny minority, a very, very small minority, can take over and push society in its direction and change the way that everyone else behaves? How does this work? Well, Taleb notices that with a very, very small minority who are intransigent, who have certain views or certain desires that they won't change, they can take over. Because, firstly, because if what they demand, if it's easier, basically, to conform to their demands than to not conform to their demands, then people will basically conform to their demands. Two, we tend to have a desire as pro-social people to want to placate those who seem upset, who seem unhappy, who seem hurt in some way. And thirdly, this is especially the case if we kind of like them, or at the very least, if they can appeal to our sense of morality, if they have a cause such as harm avoidance or equality that appeals to us. And so for these kinds of groups, the important thing is to be intransigent and to be unhappy and emotional and whatever, but not to, and to make demands, but not so extreme that they are disliked. And they have to get that balance right. And as long as they get that balance right and they don't become so extreme that they cause a backlash and they are excluded from society, then they can effectively take over. He gives many examples of how this works. An obvious example that occurs to me is a very small minority of people in Finland who have a problem with drinking milk, who are lactose intolerant. Now, all of the people who are not lactose intolerant, the overwhelming majority, can drink lactose intolerant milk. But the people who are lactose intolerant claim that they cannot drink normal milk. The result of this is that very quickly, shops in Finland stop selling normal yogurt, for example, or normal products. They only sell the lactose intolerant products because these can be consumed by everybody. And so consequently, a very, very small minority, and Taleb estimates it could be something like 4%, are able to change the way that everybody else behaves and impose themselves on that majority. Another example would be the use of halal food. Intransigent Muslims will refuse to eat non-halal meat. Most people, although there is some pushback, most people who are non-Muslim will not. They don't care. It's too much effort to care. They'll just eat halal meat. And so, therefore, eventually you get to a point where all meat served in areas where there are hardly any Muslims at all is halal. Another issue is the issue of pork. There are now large areas where, for example, Subway sandwiches and places like this, they don't sell pork because Muslims object to there being any pork anywhere near their food. Other people, they don't mind if there's no ham, they'll just have something else. And so you end up with a situation where ham is verboten. A possible issue soon, it's not happened yet because there's too much pushback because we like meat so much, but is vegetarianism. So people say that the non-vegetarians will eat vegetarian food, the vegetarians won't eat non-vegetarian food, and so if you're only going to have one set of food, then you may as well have, it's easier to just have vegetarian food. Now, it hasn't got to that point yet, but it could get to that point. And there are many, many other examples of this. And Taleb looks at this in his book Skin in the Game, in how this works in terms of religiosity. So Muslims assert that you have to become a Muslim if you want to marry another Muslim. The non-Muslims don't really care. There's a pretty young Muslim girl, a non-Muslim wants to marry her, and so he becomes a Muslim, as Omar Sharif did, and therefore the children end up Muslim and the religion spreads. You could see this with the rise of Christianity. Pagans, they don't mind, they're laissez-faire about these kinds of things. Christians, they demand that you become a Christian or whatever. They won't eat idol meats, you know, they're the intransigent minority, and so they end up spreading because people will tend to kowtow to them, just to make things easier. It's just simpler that way. And this is how all this stuff starts to spread. If we don't have non-white people represented in positions of power in dramas set in the 18th century, woke people will kick up a fuss. The non-woke will not kick up a fuss if this is done. They don't really care as much, and so therefore you have to have them represented, and you have unrealistic historical dramas, and therefore it spreads, and you get to a point where even something that's based on truth that's set in 2005 in North Wales has to have a drama about a murder has to have a black detective put in, even though there was no such person in real life, you know, just to appease the tiny minority. And so this is how these people from a tiny, tiny minority can spread, because if it is easier for the rest of the group because they don't really care as much, they're not intransigent. We tend to want to placate people who will signal that they're upset and unhappy and emotional and hurt, and we can empathize with them because they have a common core. We understand them. Remember that there are these five moral foundations: belief in authority, loyalty to the group, disgust and sanctity, equality, and harm avoidance. And conservatives, or most people, have all five, whereas the liberals, the extreme left, only really have two. That means that the conservatives can empathize with the liberals, the liberals can't empathize with the conservatives. And this will therefore push things always in the direction of equality and in the direction of harm avoidance, because of the asymmetric relationship that you see there. And so things always move in that direction. And therefore, these people that make a fuss will be able to push the whole of society in their direction, despite being a tiny, tiny minority. And there are many other examples of this that we could give. Now, what then you get, of course, once you accept that, is you get them becoming parasitic. You get them saying, well, you need people to regulate this. You need, if you want to avoid people dying of peanut allergies on aeroplanes, you need a peanut allergy specialist who can come in and ensure that your aeroplane is, you know, okay for people with peanut allergies. You need a person who can come in and ensure that your place of work is disabled compliant. You need people that can come in and make sure that none of your books are offensive to homosexuals or offensive to transsexuals or offensive to black people. people. You need people that can do that for you. And of course, and then they, if you say, I don't need those people, then they'll kick up a big intransigent stink again. And they'll say, oh, well, we will refuse to read products that are not compliant with this and that do not have people that have regulated this stuff. Whereas the people the other way round, they won't mind, they don't care enough. They won't mind reading products that they won't mind reading things that have been manipulated in this way. They'll just accept it. And so, again, they end up creating for themselves and manipulating society into creating these non-jobs for them, you know, diversity officer and things like this, so that they can have, therefore, even more influence in organisations and even more influence in the government and even more influence in the way things are. And this, of course, gets even worse, because once they make up, let's say, 4% of an organisation, once 4% of an organisation are people like this, and certainly the evidence indicates that once 20 or 25% of an organisation are people like this, then things will tip in their direction. And this has been found in experiments, that people will, you know, be shown something and they will describe what they've been shown. And then you have a plant in the room who will say the opposite is true. We'll say something empirically inaccurate. And once about 25% of people are saying something empirically inaccurate, then the rest of the room will tip towards them, because those people seem to have the power and the authority, and you want to be on the winning team. And that is how it is that things can move from one belief to another belief very, very quickly, because once you have a large intransigent minority who are very, very loud and noisy and seem like they're the future and they're the winning team, you want to be on the winning team. And so you tip over to them. And so therefore these people can just take over entire organisations and push them in an ever more woke direction, in an ever more left-wing direction, in an ever more direction, ever more obsessed, supposedly, with equality and harm avoidance. And you don't just get non-jobs as well. You also get non-products. So all of the products that we have, vegetarian, that are completely unnecessary, and only a tiny minority of people would ever push for, things like that you make in order to placate them, things like vegetarian sausages and fair trade coffee. I don't like fair trade coffee. I like to know if I consume coffee that my coffee consumption is playing a part in group selection. Damn it! But fair trade coffee and whatever else. Again, they will refuse to drink unfair trade coffee. Most people don't mind drinking fair trade coffee, even if they have to pay a little bit extra. They don't want to make a fuss. Eventually you have the rise of these non-products, and they are consumed even by people that don't really care about these things, and therefore it spreads and it spreads and it spreads. And recycling could be regarded as an example of this. I mean, back in the 1980s when I was a boy, it was just a tiny minority of weirdos that recycled, but then it's pushed for and pushed for and pushed for, and now we all have to recycle. Smoking is an example of this. Back in the 1980s, there was only a tiny minority of people that objected to smoking, but now smoking has been banned in public places and whatever. And there's just so many other examples of this, but the tiny minority. Now, what is the nature of this tiny minority? I've looked at this in another video, who gets offended. The nature of the people that get offended, the nature of people that are intransigent, the nature of these kinds of people that want to control other people, is people that are high in the personality trait neuroticism. The personality trait neuroticism involves experiencing negative feelings strongly. So people that are high in neuroticism will tend to experience any negative feeling you can think of: anger, hatred, anxiety, depression, whatever. They will tend to experience those extremely, extremely intensely. And therefore, they dislike other people having control over them. They like to have control over other people or whatever. They like to feel that they're in charge and they're important, because they basically have a lack of self-esteem. They have a lack of self-worth. And so being important and being in control of other people gives them a sense of self-worth and whatever, a sense of empowerment. And this matters to them, because there is a sense of anxiety sort of fundamentally to their soul. This neuroticism, interestingly, if you're high in neuroticism, then you can go through periods of being extremely religious, of being fervently, fundamentally religious, in which you have black and white certainties, because the black and white certainties give a sense of structure to your chaotic, frightening world. And so therefore you sort of feel better. And so people that are high in neuroticism will be prone to this kind of extremism, where they will be pushed into these groups that will, you know, overtly try and make the society better or whatever it is, because doing so gives them a sense that they're important, gives them a sense that they matter, gives them a sense that they have power, and therefore helps to allay their neuroticism. One of the things that crosses over with neuroticism is borderline personality disorder and narcissism, and this is the idea that you fundamentally lack a clear sense of self. Your world is so chaotic and frightening that you don't really feel in control of it. You don't really feel that you're in the driving seat, and so you're not really sure sort of who you are and where you are and where other people begin and where you end. You have a lack of a sense of self. You deal with this by creating a clear black and white sense of self, a very clear identity, black and white identity, and that identity will often be unstable because deep down, you have this darkness, so this sense of anxiety at the heart of you. Narcissism, where you believe that you're perfect and wonderful and you need the praise of everybody else and whatever, and you need to feel important. Narcissism is an example of such a means of dealing with neuroticism. And people that are narcissistic can suffer from what's called narcissistic rage, which is that when a person basically questions the things which give them a sense of their own importance and their own exalted self, then they can become absolutely furious and want to destroy them because that person is basically opening up what they're trying to hide and what they're so frightened of and feel so intensely. You feel like almost they'll kill themselves, which is the fundamental anxiety at their heart. And the kind of people that virtue signal, and there's been research on this by Ock et al., virtue signalling, which is a left-wing trait these days, obviously, is associated with Machiavellianism, i.e. the desire for power, and with narcissism. And this makes a great deal of sense, because there's a great deal of research that's found that being left-wing is associated with neuroticism. And the more left-wing you are, the more neurotic you are, the more negative feelings you feel, the more strongly you feel negative feelings, and even the less in control of your life you feel. There's been research on that, which would be consistent with this being a product of sort of borderline personality disorder. So you have these deeply unhappy people, these deeply neurotic, anxious people that deal with this by who are often as well. Neuroticism correlates with our strategy, i.e., that is that you live fast, die young, and therefore with being highly individualistic as well, rather than being evolved towards the good of the group, which is a K strategy: live slow, die old. And so, therefore, these kinds of people are live fast, die young people in an unstable, frightening world, and they deal with it by coming up with a very strong sense of identity based around individual rights and the importance of individual things, i.e. harm avoidance and equality and everyone feeling good and feeling the same, rather than things that are necessarily good for the group as a whole, which would be conforming and eating meat like everybody else. And this gives them a sense of identity and a sense of importance and a sense that they're better than everybody else. And then they can use that. This is what motivates them, basically, these kinds of feelings. And therefore, they a tiny minority. They will be intransigent. They will be angry. They will be black and white. They will be absolutely certain that they're right. They will become furious if you say that they're not right, or you disagree with them in any way. And they will see you as wicked and evil if you disagree with them in any way. And they will push for the good of the disabled or the good of whatever, some minority or whatever it is, because doing so, acting like that, makes them feel that they're morally superior to other people, which makes them feel they're superior to other people, which is narcissism, which makes them, and also it allows other people to like them, and therefore they deal with their own problems and their own anxieties and whatever, and so that's why then they have to act like it all the time. They have to constantly be doing this as a way of allaying their own fundamental insecurities about themselves. And so we back down to them and we kowtow to them, and they can therefore slowly dominate the society, but without actually doing anything. I mean, they're not contributing anything positive to the society, really, at all. They're just causing the society to be more individualistic, for people to think of themselves, their own rights, their own feelings, what they want. I'm a person who was, I walk with a limp, I couldn't walk properly till I was in my teens. I didn't go on about it and make society change for my good. You just have to live with it and get on with it. But no, that's not good enough. No, they demand this, they demand that, all these changes, and the vast majority of people who are normal should change to accommodate them, or to accommodate the people that they happen to identify with, because identifying with the marginalised makes them feel that they're important and they're superior to other people and they're more moral than other people. And that is how this these people spread through the society. So they're basically parasites of society, the left. They're parasites of society. Other people make money, other people innovate things, other people do things. And they simply, by being highly intransigent and virtue signalling and whatever, manage to get positions for themselves which are completely unnecessary in the society. So they can be seen to be parasites of society. Now, how can this be reverted? How can you fight back against this sort of thing? Well, one way is to push them beyond the pale. So remember that the reason why what they're doing is they're getting the balance right. You don't, if someone has some bizarre demand and you don't like them, or you don't feel for them, you don't empathise with them, then you're not going to help them. You're just going to react against it and say, no, don't be ridiculous. So they have to get the balance right such that their bizarre, unreasonable demand seems rather reasonable. So they have to appeal to a sense of manipulate us by appealing to a sense of equality, by appealing to a sense of harm avoidance or whatever. And in a society that is increasingly obsessed with those traits, they will be successful in doing so. Had they tried to do so in the 70s or the 60s, it wouldn't have worked. But in the 90s or the noughties, then it does work. So they have to get that balance right. They have to be ultimately slightly likable. An example I can think of is someone who gets invited to a party and they declare they're vegetarian, and then somebody else goes and cooks a separate meal just for them. Now, you wouldn't do that for a person you didn't like, but if that person is likable enough, they can get away with that. You know, they've got a good sense of humour or something. They can get away with that kind of selfishness. Now, you can see that with the woke people. They are likable enough in the sense that they appeal to these moral foundations that we hold in common with them, but also we're often talking about pretty young girls and people like this, and they come across as nice, they come across as so awfully, awfully concerned, and so therefore you do what they want. They get beyond the pale, though, in the form of Antifa and people like that, when they start burning buildings down and whatever, and so therefore that's one way to deal with it, is to push those kinds of people, this tiny minority, beyond the pale, to stress that those people are not nice people, and to make go on and on about how they are not nice people at all. They're very unnice people indeed. They're nasty people, and they want nasty things, and you shouldn't back down to them. So that's one way of doing it. The second way of reacting against them, and this is something that Taleb looks at to some extent, is to be like them. So to be an intransigent, to be highly intransigent like them, and to manage to be just about, you know, within the bounds of acceptability for whatever reason, like them, and therefore to have the power in the same way. An example of this is that in 2004, a comedian called Jeremy Hardy, who had made jokes about the British National Party, was not allowed to perform his show in Burnley, where the British National Party were the largest opposition party. The town council banned him from performing his show at a theatre in Burnley because of the offence, because that party was supported by a sufficient minority of people in Burnley that it was feared that it would cause protest and it would cause intransigence and whatever if he turned up and was allowed to perform. So that's appealing to a moral foundation, which to some extent those people held, which is a desire for structure and order. They obviously feared there would be disorder unless they placated the supporters of this party in Burnley by not allowing this person to be there. I don't think there was a moral aspect. I don't think it was a sort of that they're nice people or that they're that they believe in equality. But I think it was a different moral foundation. It was the concern with disorder. So that seems to be another thing, to be quite clear that disorder will occur unless your intransigent view is accepted. And you can see this as well with certain Islamic groups in the UK, such as in Luton, that the people back down to them, not through morality, but through fear of disorder. So that's another issue. It's not just morality, but it's disorder as well. A third was Jerry Springer, the opera. This was by Stuart Lee, and it was cancelled basically as a result of constant protests by a group called Christian Voice in 2005. It was just, they they were prepared to go and protest every single performance of it, just cause chaos, to just make life difficult and whatever. And so it was easier for the people who were organising this, or the theatres or whatever, to simply cancel the play. So that's interesting. It's that you have an intransigent minority. Remember, these were fundamentalist Christians, and going through periods of extreme fundamentalism is associated with neuroticism as well. So that's perhaps the right's problem. They're not mentally unstable enough. But there are groups among them who are attracted to very extreme religiosity or conspiracy theories or whatever, who perhaps are mentally unstable enough. And it's the disorder, if the disorder is sufficient, which seems to persuade people, if they're highly intransigent as well, to back down. So that's one possibility. And you could see this as well with Life of Brian in the 70s, that it was banned in various cinemas in the UK. But I hope that makes clear then how a tiny minority, a very small minority, can take over through a combination of absolute intransigence, through totally irrational, extreme intransigence and rejecting all reason, because it's easier to let them on a tiny, tiny thing, have their way, which will mean that they'll want more and more and more and more, because we are evolved to placate the intransigent, and we especially do so if we see somehow doing so will avoid disorder, or they are within the realms of acceptability, and we kind of empathise with them and we want to help them because they seem on some level slightly nice and slightly kind. And that is how these people manage to take over and really extract resources from the rest of us. Okay, well, I hope this has been of interest, and if it has, then, by the way, our Squire commissioned this, I should just say, then please feel free to support the show, which you can do in the various ways in the box below, and remember that I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, and I will see you soon, and goodbye!